Hey everybody, this is Flares and Films, and this week we're doing Groundhog Day.
Hit the music!
They say our love won't pay the rent, for it's earned, our money's all been spent. I guess that's so, we don't have a plot, but at least I'm sure of all the things we got.
Hey everybody, I'm Michael Flaherty.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty. This is Flaherty's on Films. It's a little podcast where we talk about movies. Michael, what are we talking about this week and what is it about?
I'll tell you. This week we're doing the film Groundhog Day because I think this will be released very close to Groundhog Day in the same month. I mean, isn't that something? So here's the description. A weatherman finds himself inexplicably living the same day over and over again. Colleen, have you seen this film before?
I kind of thought I had seen more of it than I had, as we had talked about off mic. But no, this is the first time I've seen it from start to finish.
Whoa.
So it was a very exciting experience for me in ways I will talk about later. Michael, have you seen this film?
I actually kind of saw it. I think I had that kind of experience where, like, I've seen bits of it, I knew it. But then I did see, like, the whole thing, like, somewhat recently. I feel like a few months ago. And I don't know why. I was just like, this is on now. And I did.
That doesn't seem like you, because, spoiler alert, you are not a Murray fan.
I'm not a Murray fan, but I do actually like this film because I think the premise is very fun. And I feel like the film likes to just explore its very fun premise. But I just don't care for the main character. And now we're going to go to our next segment. Bam.
Time for Sam, the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some super cool facts about the film, not the holiday, Groundhog Day. You have to make that distinction when you Google it.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, but I was concerned that you guys would throw Groundhog Day questions at me, so I did a little research on the holiday too.
What day is it of the month?
It is February 2nd.
Tomorrow.
How many
tomorrow
times?
This recording. Sorry.
What's the ratio of see the shadow, don't see the shadow?
Michael.
About 50-50, but it doesn't actually matter.
You know why though, Michael?
Why?
It's so fucking crazy. So I had this idea that Groundhog Day was, they have this little groundhog, he comes out and everyone's like, there's a shadow, and then he goes back. No, it is fucking bananas. Yeah. It is so crazy. Am I right, Sam?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So they have these guys. Hang on.
Also, you should say the name of the town, because I accidentally put this in my notes 300 times and I actually don't know how to pronounce it.
Punxsutawney.
Okay, cool. Continue.
Right. So first of all, this is based on an old pagan thing where it was like any hibernating animal, if they saw the shadow, it was the more winter.
It was originally badgers.
Right. So it's like a German thing, and Pennsylvania is very German, right?
Yeah.
So are you ready?
Yeah.
Michael.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay.
You were just saying that to stall.
So, first of all, the lore is that it's been the same exact groundhog since 1886.
Okay, weird already.
Already weird. He wasn't called Phil until about the 60s, which they think was named after Prince Philip.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm so excited for you. So, they go to Gobbler's Knob, which was depicted in the film. But so they have this thing called the Inner Circle, and it's this like town elders who come together, and there's like the president of the Inner Circle.
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
Yeah.
He speaks groundhog ease and talks to Phil. Yeah. And he's the only person who's able to understand groundhog ease through this possession of an Acadia wood cane.
Whoa.
And he interprets the message. And then there are two scrolls, one for each, shadow, no shadow.
Yeah.
And then he comes out and so when Sam said 50-50, that's probably why they just
I think we saw a bit of that, right? We saw a bit of the scroll.
Yeah, but I just thought they'd be like, there's a shadow. Oh, there's no shadow because it's sunny out or whatever.
I didn't realize that this was like a super special thing in this one real life ass town. I thought like small towns across the country just did this.
I think
small towns across the country do, but this is like the main town for it. Mm. And actually, like, I don't have it written down off the top of my head. I think before this film came out, about 2,000 people would come to the groundhogging. I don't know what you call it. But now like 10,000s come.
Jeez.
It's like such a big deal now because 40,000
people come to Punxsutawney. Wow. Probably not this year.
Probably. Hopefully not.
Hopefully people are cool about it. Yeah. In the United States, there's one in New Jersey, one in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, the groundhog capital of the world.
Mom told me that. Just like last year, the groundhog bit the guy.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
Okay. So now talking about Groundhog Day, the movie.
All right.
So Danny Rubin was a wannabe screenwriter new to Hollywood, trying to come up with stories. One day, while reading a book about vampires, he started wondering about the effects of immortality and how would it change a person. A few years later, his agent suggested Rubin write a calling card script. So basically, a calling card script is a really intriguing script idea that gets you in the door with producers where you can show them the scripts you actually are trying to sell. So you just kind of do like this flashy, like, hey, look at this. And then once you're in, you're like, okay, now actually, please look at my very sensible screenplay.
Okay.
So for his calling card script, Rubin turned back to his immortal questions from years ago. However, to keep the script simple, he decided to have it be a single day that replays over and over for eternity versus actual time moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So inspired by Christmas movies, Rubin decided to have the repetitive day be a holiday, and the next holiday on his calendar was none other than Groundhog's Day. And with that, the screenplay of Groundhog Day was born. The calling card script would find its way to Harold Ramis, who found the story very interesting. He would meet with Rubin, and the two would discuss their thoughts on the philosophy and magic of the story. Eventually, Rubin would sign over his contract to Columbia and Ramis, but very important to note here is when he signed it over with a big studio like Columbia, he lost all the rights to kind of re-edit it and have any control over where the story went. And once the studio had signed on to the film, they decided it needed to be rewritten. Because the original story was more about the psychology of this man, and they wanted a comedy film, just like a generic comedy film.
Sure.
So, okay. Yeah, they appealed to the masses kind of an idea. So, Rubin wasn't happy, and some of the big changes, like a lot of just like the language changed and the tone changed. It became more of a romantic comedy and just different things like that. But in his original screenplay, the film actually starts off with just like a typical morning for Phil. And as the day goes on, the audience starts to notice that Phil eerily knows what's about to happen. And then all of a sudden he wakes up and it's the same morning again. So you kind of are thrown into the loop.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I like that as much. It's hard. Yeah,
like you have to kind of catch on that it's happening. The studio decided it'd be more fun to watch his initial realization that is happening.
Hard agree. Good job, studio. Hey, wait. So I thought this was a Harold Ramis directing, right?
Yes, he did direct it, but he also co-wrote it.
I'm surprised that it wasn't a comedy from the start, just because he's a comedy guy.
I've seen that the rewrites were very extensive to the point that like the big, like the similarity is the concept, really.
Yeah.
Like, I only saw like one example of like a scene that was kind of a similar scene, but like the writing is completely different in tone, in character, and everything. So
yeah, he really brought the comedy out. So he did like it originally because of the philosophy and the idea behind it. But once he signed on, between him and the studio, they went in a more comedic and romantic direction and changed the plot to go that way. Cool. And the other big change is that when Phil wakes up and it's actually February 3rd, Rita wakes up and she's now in her own eternal loop. And that was how the movie was supposed to end.
Oh, that'd be great.
But the idea was scrapped because you have to give audience a happy ending.
I do like that ending. That's good.
That's just like, why would...
I would have been a better movie, and I'm going to talk more about why later, all so right. Go on.
All right.
So when it came time to cast the lead, Tom Hanks was actually the first choice. Oh. However, it was decided that he was too nice, and he actually fought for it. And he's like, but the audience will think I'm too nice, and that way it's going to be really shocking when I'm not. And they're like, no, Tom Hanks, you're no. No,
yeah. I don't like that, because I've seen him be Joe Fox. He can be a dick. Joe Fox is from You've Got Mail, for those
who don't know. Oh, he is not a dick in that.
The caviar is a garnish.
He's adorable. Anyways, he's so other Woody. Names.
Who's a bigger asshole than Woody?
Yeah, he is a good point, Michael. Thank that you. Was actually, a better, more relatable example.
Woody was supposed to be much more
you
of a dick.
You are a toy! Go on.
So other names thrown around was Michael Keaton, who apparently didn't understand the script, but has said he's regretted saying no. And
it'd be a little intense.
It'd be intense.
I would maybe want to see that, though, actually.
Man, but not a lot of hotties around 1995, were there?
Boy. 93.
Oh.
Wasn't Tom Hanks hot? At some point.
He had the feathered hair, I suppose.
Yeah.
There you go. However, Ramis would turn to his friend Bill Murray, who he had already directed in Ghostbusters, Caddyshack, and Stripes. As for the other star of the film, we have Punxsutawney Phil.
Punxsutawney
Phil.
What's the town?
Tawny, like Tawny Cat.
What's the town in Parks and Recreation?
Pawnee.
Pawnee. It's kind of like that. That's not even close.
Punxsutawney Pawnee.
Yeah.
That's a rhymes.
Yeah.
So
Punxsutawney actually took some offense because Ramis went there and was like, oh, this isn't the look I want. So he found the look in Illinois instead. And Punxsutawney was a little offended that they were going to be making this movie, but they weren't pretty enough to be shot in. So they wouldn't let them have Punxsutawney Phil. So instead, they literally trapped a wild groundhog. They named him Scooter, and they used him in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So this was not like a trained animal.
It is so weird that those were their two options. Like, we can get the real Punxsutawney Phil, or just get some PA to capture a wild
it
groundhog.
Makes you think that really they just wanted to make that PA. It's like, they're calling. They're actually letting us use the gopher. They're like, no. Craig, you're going to go get it. Don't try to get out of this.
It was probably like a challenge, like, yeah, go grab one. And then when he actually showed up, they're like, well.
Like, I don't even like it. I don't even like the script. I just want to see Craig do it.
Yeah, I heard. So, like, because Gobbler's Knob, where they, like, do it, is actually not even in Punxsutawney. Like, it's, like, in a rural area just outside Punxsutawney. So, it's not in this cute little small town setting.
Does Gobbler's Knob sound inappropriate to anybody
else? So inappropriate.
Okay,
thank
you.
I thought it was a joke for the movie, but it's totally real.
Okay.
So, obviously, the groundhog bit Murray multiple times, and he had to get rabies injections. Good, so, it was just a bad situation with the groundhog. It was Murray's idea to have Phil read to Rita until she falls asleep. He got the idea from his own honeymoon when his wife had too much champagne and fell asleep while Murray read to her. That being said, while filming, Murray was actually going through a really traumatic divorce. And because of this, he and Ramis clashed often. Like, Ramis was like, he was just a jerk, like, the whole time. And apparently his mood would shift randomly and would just be all over the board, and he was just kind of difficult. And so whenever Ramis would try and give him notes on a scene, Murray would just interrupt him and ask, just tell me, good Phil or bad Phil? So this movie would prove to be too much for Ramis and Murray's friendship. After the film wrapped, the two wouldn't speak for about 20 years.
Wow.
Just completely cut him out. Also, there was some things I read, like Murray was nervous that he could only be good in films that Ramis directed, so it was kind of like stepping away from that relationship to grow.
God, I just hate Bill Murray. I don't know why.
Well, I will say this. Ramis got really sick towards the end of his life and to the point where he could almost not speak, and Murray's brother convinced him to mend the fences before he passed. And so Murray did go, and they had a long talk though obviously Murray had to do most of the talking before his passing in 2014. So they did reconnect before then. But
I don't have a dog in this fight against or Michael's hatred of Bill Murray, but I have heard that Harold Ramis is like the sweetest guy ever. So I feel like...
I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know. Who knows what side you fall on there, but this is just some things I've heard.
I'm kind of a centrist, you know? I don't like to take sides.
So the new Punxsutawney was actually in Woodstock, Illinois, and they were very proud to be the substitute, and they've placed two plaques in their town. The first one is right by the puddle Phil steps into, and it reads, Bill Murray stepped here. Mm-hmm. And then the other is on the wall that reads Ned's Corner, and that's where Ned would always pop over.
Oh,
so
that's nice.
Isn't it? It's in two Illinois towns, right?
The main one, it's in two towns and then some sound staging too, in right. That was obviously in Hollywood, but the main one was in Woodstock.
Yeah, no, because they have a surprising amount of tourism based on people going there because Groundhog Day was filmed there. So
yes, yeah. So the premiere of Groundhog Day took place on February 4th, 1993, and Murray did not attend. It would gross in the box office $70.9 million, and it's considered a success. It wasn't like the biggest movie of all time, but it did well. It was the 14th highest grossing film of 1993. Kind of like we've seen in the past, this is definitely a film that has grown. Like, it wasn't unsuccessful. It was successful, just not outrageous. But it also has grown with this almost like cult following since it was released.
Did it have a TBS situation? Like,
it didn't specifically say that. Like, we've seen that in oh my goodness, I'm blanking.
Well, A Christmas Story. That was a big one.
Yeah, and What's the Life. Thank you. Were those where they specifically can tie it to a TV release of it? This, I haven't seen anything about that, just that it's kind of been, like, since it's been listed as one of the great comedies of the 1990s and stuff like that. So it's just kind of grown with popularity over time, but not due to a specific TV reasoning. So... both Bill Murray and Harold Ramis have become honorary grand marshals for the Groundhog Day celebration.
Oh.
So that was very exciting.
That's nice.
And my final fact for you guys today. So there's been a lot of debate about how long Phil is in this loop. And my initial plan was to ask you guys how long he actually was. But this is... like, people even who have done the math can't agree on it. So, Ramis has said originally 10,000 years, and then he's like, just kidding, it was 10. Some fans put in a lot of work to figure it out, and they came up with 12,403 days. And this one website, the Wolfnards, I don't really know, said it was 8 years, 8 months, and 16 days. Truth Movie said 4,576 years. It's just all over the board.
Wasn't there a whole book written about how the whole point is you don't know?
Yeah.
Like, that's like intrinsic to it.
Well, and the whole thing was when they were creating it is that they wanted, because the studio originally was like, you need to have a reason why this is happening to him. And they kind of like fought about it and just were kind of like, oh, we'll come up with it eventually. But they didn't really want a reason for it. They just wanted you to not think about it and just watch him deal with it. So I don't think they ever had definites on the time. They just kind of had like, oh, he was in it for a while. So people who are doing these maths and coming up with these numbers are basing it on how long does it take to become a master XYZ, because he, you know, masters all these things. But there is not supposed to be like a actual timeline. But my question for you guys is, how many days do we see in the film?
How many days do we see?
Yes.
I'm going to guess 40.
Oh, that's a good guess. I want to guess. I think it's lower than you think. because he just implies repetition a lot more than actually we see, right?
I don't know.
So I'm going to say 25.
We see 38 Whoa! Days in this film.
Nice job, Michael.
Hell yeah.
Because see, my first guess would have been like 200. And I'm like, no.
That was Bam. Time for Sam.
Time for Sam. That was great.
Yeah, it's good they don't explain things.
I have a lot of opinions
about at the end of Lost.
Talk about later.
At the end of the show Lost, they go down under the island and there's this hole where darkness is like spewing out and then they plug it up and that's how the show ends. So, in conclusion, don't always explain things because sometimes it's really stupid. Anyway, let's go to
I would argue that one of their ideas was that there's a scientist and his experiment's going wrong and they can't figure out why. And I kind of want to see that film.
Yeah, but that takes like 40 minutes out of the movie then.
Yeah, I agree with Michael that I think it's...
Unless it was... who's Back to the Future? The actor. What's his name? Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd. If it was him, it's good. Okay, now time for our next segment, Critics Corner, where we listen to what the critics have to say.
I will start. Okay. Murray, more often than not, is pretty unbearable. But here, playing a man who is unbearable, Murray begins convincingly, amusingly, and gets even more amusing as he metamorphoses.
Is that a word?
Is that metamorphoses?
I like, sure. Can I summarize this review? Bill Murray's a dick, but hey, good movie.
That's Stanley Kaufman of the New Republic.
So this is by Steve Brown, who writes for Amazon Reviews. Not even a real review, it's just an Amazon review. immoral sex! Disappointing! I didn't remember that from years ago.
I don't know why, I thought it was very funny that two of the one-star reviews were just mad that it wasn't Stripes.
That is weird. That movie sucks.
Murray hasn't made a comedy this winningly dumb and smart, and yes, sweet, in a long time, if indeed he ever has.
Aww.
Says Steve Ray of the Philadelphia Inquirer.
This one's by H. Miller, who I'm going to say is named Harold. What used to pass for funny seems so sad and old-fashioned now. Both the sexual arrogance of Phil and the passiveness of Rita. Started watching with my teens, but didn't finish.
I thought you would like the term sexual arrogance.
I love the term sexual arrogance.
Not really sure what he's getting at, but I love it.
I love it.
This is from our friend of the pod, Peter Bradshaw.
Shout out.
He did not originally do a review in 1993, but this is a review of feel-good movies.
We need like a soundboard, and every time we do Peter Bradshaw's review, we gotta press the button.
Welcome, Peter. And then like something Britishy.
Is there a line from Hook where he goes, Peter, or something like that?
Bring me Peter Bradshaw.
I'll just clip that out of the episode.
Bring me Peter
Bradshaw. He becomes a better person, but the film's own comedic miracle is that it doesn't labor this point despite Murray's hilariously laborious ordeal or even make it explicit. And I think that's inspirational.
Okay. Interesting.
Oh, it's inspirational movies.
This is by Jack Crane, who I think is an Amazon reviewer. It's just awful. It was a run-of-the-mill 90s comedy that was boring and badly made that hipsters now claim is a work of genius. I'm sorry. I'm going to file this under overrated because high. All right. That's Jack Crane.
Let's go to our intern summary. Let's just dive into this movie.
Into it. You start.
It's February 1st, because if we all remember, February 2nd is Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
We meet television weatherman Phil Connors, and he reassures his Pittsburgh viewers that an approaching blizzard will miss Western Pennsylvania, which I feel like the movie is trying to tell us he's also not a very good weatherman, which I like.
Really? I got the over... I felt like it was an overbearing point that he is okay at his job, but he's just like over it. Like, I'm too good for this job.
I guess that he got the blizzard wrong. I thought was sort of supposed to be, or it's not even that he's bad at his job, is that he's just, he's got a bit of hubris, right? Like,
yes,
if he makes a prediction, that's right.
Yeah, that's definitely their point they're making. Yeah.
Alongside his producer, Rita Hansen, who is played by the beautiful Andie MacDowell, and cameraman Larry, who's like a guy actor that I, you know, but I don't know him.
I don't know.
they travel to Punxsutawney for their annual coverage of the Groundhog Day festivities.
Hey, question. Is Rita brand new? I thought this was, they just met. Rita,
yeah,
and
which
Phil.
Makes the end of the film not as sweet as I think it's
also
supposed
some
to be.
Lines like Phil goes to Rita and goes, I need to talk about something, but it's not about work. And she's like, you never talk about work. But it's like, have you, you guys never talk? Like, I don't understand what this is about.
It feels like she's getting to know him through the film, which is not quite right.
Not how that works.
Right. But, in the on February 1st, he is meeting her for the first time.
She's like, but, yeah.
But it does feel like she likes to gossip about how much Phil sucks with the cameraman. So it feels like she's already made a lot of the conclusions about him that are accurate.
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyway, so Phil makes no secret of his contempt for the assignment, the small town, the Hicks who live there, asserting he will be leaving his station for a new job. And I texted you this because I felt it was a really mean opinion about Bill Murray. Mm-hmm. But you just kind of know what local affiliate news people look like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they didn't even try to make him, I don't know, like make his teeth a little whiter, comb his fucking hair.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm
people
saying?
People on the news, they look normal. They look non-threatening. No,
they look, but they also look like they're trying a bit too hard to look good.
Yeah.
Which is the opposite of Bill Murray's look. You know, like with the impeccable tailored suits and the teeth and the like, he just doesn't look like a news guy at all.
Not even at all. Tom Hanks would have.
Tom Hanks would have pulled it off.
Yeah.
Even Michael Keaton, I think, could have pulled it off.
Yeah. Hell, I'll just say this right off the bat. So the movie is like, man, Bill Murray sucks, right? But I think the movie also wants you to find it a little bit fun and charming, which I do not. And
I don't think so. I disagree with you, but go on.
Well, my only point in this part is I just feel like there's a lot of lines in the beginning where Phil says something, obviously, like a dick. You know, he says something because he's a mean. And the movie can't drag down in tone too harshly. So I feel like characters can't react like humans. Like, if I was reacting to Bill, to everything he says, I'd be like, all right, well, fuck you too. You know what I mean? Because he just says really mean stuff. But because it's a comedy and people have to kind of laugh, they go, oh, Phil.
No, man, maybe it's because you never had to be in a workplace in the 90s, but I do feel like that's how people would be with a difficult white dude. Like, especially someone who is the talent. They'd be like, I guess we just have to put up with him being a fucking asshole.
But the way I feel the movie frames it, I think you're not wrong, but the movie frames is like, they kind of are kind of putting up because he's so funny, but he is a dick.
I don't know if I agree with that because I feel like the beginning, and maybe this isn't the movie, but it's just a accident of the movie that has aged well, kind of, because to me he's so pathetic.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like he's just always like, I'm doing better things than Pittsburgh, which, by the way, Pittsburgh affiliate, you could do worse, my friend. that is a big audience. That is Western PA. All right. But yeah, he just seems sad and lonely and not that great at his job and angry.
Our like, points are different, but not that different. My only point is, okay, go ahead.
I just don't find that any of the characters that react to him like he's charming. They are acting like, oh, I have to just be like, because he's the talent.
And I think you're being slightly too charitable towards the film. Like, they never cut away at Rita when he's not there and be like, God, thank God he's not here because he really brings me down and I'm uncomfortable.
That's not true. Yeah. Later in the film, they have her and the cameraman just bitching about him behind his back more than one time.
But isn't it like kind of fun? Like, oh man, he's always rude.
Well, okay.
Not like, God, so when we get back, we're going to file a restraint against him. We're going to complain. We're going to have a heart-to-heart because it's really irresponsible the way he's been behaving.
Michael, in the 90s, you didn't fix workplace disputes. You just let assholes be assholes. And I would say one of the most fun bonding things, honestly, actually, in my offices has been to complain about how terrible someone is. So it is fun. Okay. That seems like real to me.
Okay.
They suck. I know, right? Let's drink about it and talk about it more. It's so fun.
All right. Where are we?
The second paragraph.
Okay. On February 2nd, Groundhog's Day, Phil awakens in the Cherry Tree Inn to Sonny and Cher's I Got You, Babe, playing on the clock radio. He gives a half-hearted performance reporting on the Groundhog, Punxsutawney Phil, and the festivities. Contrary to Connor's prediction, the blizzard strikes the area, preventing all travel out of Punxsutawney. And though he desperately searches for a way to leave, he is eventually forced to spend the night in the town.
Yeah, like that scene where he's on the phone and he's like, don't you have special, charters for celebrities and emergencies? Because this is both. And it's like, it's so sad. But in a funny kind of way. I don't know. I enjoyed that.
One thing I like about this movie, kind of the overarching thing I like about this movie, is how much they explore the kind of premise of him being stuck in a time loop. One thing I don't like, why doesn't he ever leave Punxsutawney at the beginning of the day?
Didn't he once?
No, I don't remember.
To go get that lady.
He like drove out of town. But yeah, I'd say he spends like a lifetime in this time loop. I feel like that, part of his lifetime should be like exploring the neighboring towns. Because he could
that
just
is weird
leave.
That he doesn't do that. That is weird.
Plow hole. We need that's on the soundboard. Plow hole.
So the next morning, Phil wakes up once more to I Got You, Babe, and the same DJ banter on the radio. This actually, I have a very specific memory for Christmas once. I got a clock radio / CD player that you could wake up to. And at one point, I just put an oldies mix in there. And I would wake up every morning to the beginning of Brick House. Dun, 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 dun. And after a while, I got so sick of that song, very much like Phil does in this film. But that was actually really motivating to get me out of bed. Huh. So I was like so sick of the song Brick House. And it would make me annoyed and angry so much that it would make me get out of bed to turn off the alarm clock.
You got out of spite.
Just like, fuck you, Brick House.
Yeah, that's how like I wake up every day to the radio going, I bet you're just going to sleep. You're not even going to get up, are you?
Fuck you, man.
I will too.
So Phil experiences previous day's events, repeating exactly, like experiencing deja vu. And then he tries to leave again, goes to bed.
When he awakes, wait. Are we right here?
Yeah.
When he awakes, it is again February 2nd. Phil gradually realizes that he is trapped in a time loop that no one else is aware of. He confides his situation to Rita, who directs him to a neurologist, who in turn directs him to a psychologist. Neither can explain his experiences. Phil gets drunk with locals Gus and Ralph and leads a police on a high-speed car chase before being arrested and imprisoned. The following morning, Phil Collins awakes in the Cherry Tree Inn.
So this gets into what is my favorite thing about this movie, which is it is a tight film and it does not waste time.
No, I agree with that.
I love it so... Well, first of all, I actually think one of the film's strengths is that, as you mentioned, as Sam mentioned, that like we don't know why this has happened. You know, there's no magic amulet. He doesn't piss off a witch or whatever.
No darkness leaking at the bottom of the island.
We don't know why it happens, but we also don't really know why it gets fixed, really. No. Which I really want to... I'm going to talk about more later. But
no.
So a really good example for this film not wasting time, it is the third day that he has experienced this time loop that he gets drunk and drives toward a train on the train tracks. Like, he is like, all right, time loop. he goes to this bar with these guys who are like extras from Fargo for some reason. You know, they kind of have an Ori Phil.
Yeah.
And he does this thing where he's on the train track. He's like, everyone's always telling you what to do. Be nice to your sister. Don't drink too much. Don't drive toward on the train tracks. He goes, Phil, that's a one I happen to agree with.
Phil, that's one I happen to agree with.
Made me laugh.
But he's like, but you should be mean to your sister.
Right. But train tracks. A little weird. But again, this movie wastes no time.
Yeah,
this is a tight 90 minutes.
It feels like they started the whole writing process by just going to a whiteboard and thinking of every idea that he could do in the time loop. Because I feel like he does them all.
Yeah.
Cool. I actually have a question for you guys.
Okay.
So for this film, kind of the linear path they took was the five stages of grieving. Did you kind of see that? So
it explains some things, yeah.
It's depression, denial, bargaining.
Denial is the first one, which he does not deny. He like gets right into it.
Wait, yeah, wait, denial. Wait, say the steps.
She's looking up. Jen, no.
Oh. Come on.
I'm looking it up. Sorry. I have a cat who's clawing all over.
All right. Well.
Okay. Hold on. Five stages of grief are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
Right. Because, yeah, I guess denial barely, but then he punches Ned in the face, which
that I should. I like that. That explanation makes me like the film more because, spoiler, the end of the movie is fixed because he decides to be nice to people.
Well,
sure. Okay, I'll just say my whole thing and we could talk about it later. But he decides to be nice at the end and like, oh, I'll be nice to Rita and I'll be supportive. And that's what breaks the time loop. And it's just weird that he decides to kill himself before he thinks maybe I should be nice to one person. But that explanation makes it make more sense why it's structured like that.
Now, it's also possible that Phil Connors has not watched a lot of movies. So why does he have any thought that if I am just nice, suddenly it'll break it, right? Like, why should he ascertain that there's any moral judgment with the time loop?
Shit, you're making me side with the movie, which I didn't want to do. I think he was just being nice because that's his character. He wasn't doing it with an objective end. He was just like,
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think, I don't think there's any reason for him to think that. So I think it does kind of make sense that he's like, I'm going to try to kill myself. That didn't work. Why don't I try to find joy out of life and be a better person?
All right. We're agreeing. That's a good part of the film. All right.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So realizing there are no consequences for his actions, which, by the way, this is, I feel like they do most of this pretty PG. But anyway, he begins spending loops, indulging in binge eating, one night stands, robbery. I love that he plays dress up with a prostitute because I feel like that's something I would do. Like, if you only had a day, let's do some fun dress up.
Yeah, but just go to, they just went to the movies? Like, how lame is that? Come on.
It's pretty lame.
It's pretty lame.
Other dangerous activities, using his increasing knowledge of the day's events, town's residents to manipulate circumstances to his advantage. At one point, he focuses on seducing Rita. Using loops to learn more about her so you can try to sleep with her, which, man, what a douchebag thing to do. Like, you know the way to seduce a woman? To learn about the things she's into and then know more than her about the things she likes. That is what women love.
What women love is when you are inside their mind always.
Women love when they have a hobby and you explain their hobby better.
You're like, yeah, so you put your French poetry down. I'll explain it to you.
Like, I know you like French poetry, but I speak fluent French and know all the French poetry. That's what you like.
Yeah.
Which doesn't work. Good job, movie.
Good.
And I do even like in the movie, she's like, you can't just like check off a list of things to do or know about me. Like, that's not how genuine human connection works. Which is a little clumsy, but also I think really well done. No, not well done. Just good. A good point to make.
Do you think that's a little, obviously it's not great that he's doing this. Like, this is a fumbling of his, you know, he's not on his way to becoming a self-actualized character or whatever. But isn't it like a little fucked up that he's doing this? Okay, here's the final. Here's
a little sexually arrogant.
A little sexually arrogant. I'm saying he's given the power of immortality and he tries every which way to seduce her. Like, let's fully manipulate the situation so she has sex with me. If he was given mind control as a power, would he have just used it to make her have sex with him? Because that's what
he could have done worse things.
It's true. It just seems like at the end of the movie, when him and Rita are like, oh, we love each other. By the way, Rita, at one point earlier on, I did try to have sex with you like a lot by manipulating the situation as hard as I could to have sex with you.
And here's an interesting morality question.
Yeah.
Like, is anything he does to someone really matter if he doesn't actually do it?
Yes. If someone did that to me, if someone like, hey, I killed you, but it was in a time loop. Did I deserve it? No, you were really nice. Like, fuck you.
I mean, you were stuck in a time loop. You had to pass the time. It didn't actually affect me in any way.
No.
Why is that immoral?
No.
I don't know.
I care about other people and I care about myself in alternate dimensions. Those are the two things that I like. You will not mess with them.
I don't know man. If like, if there's literally no consequences, if everything is worse.
Okay, so I can kill you if we're in a time loop.
Yes, because I won't know about it and I'll still be alive. Why does it matter?
Okay. You said it here. Okay, you can't take it back. If I kill you and it's a time loop, you can't be mad.
Okay.
Well, okay.
I'll make that.
All right. You can't take it back.
Anyway, so Rita slaps him a lot. Your turn, Michael.
Yeah. Okay. So Phil gradually becomes depressed and desperate for a way to escape the loop. He commits suicide in a variety of ways. Again, all happening very fast.
I really like that, actually.
Even kidnapping Punxsutawney Phil and driving them both off a cliff. Each time he awakens.
I liked that scene. I thought it was funny. I don't know why. When they're like, wow, why is he drunk or something? And he's just like instructing the rodent on how to drive. I thought it was funny. It made me laugh.
It's cute. Each time he wakes up February 2nd to I Got You, Babe, he eventually tries to explain his situation to Rita again, using his detailed knowledge of the day to accurately predict events. Which is
Here's
fun.
The thing. I liked that bit.
It's a fun scene.
And when I'm watching it, I'm like, I would just never, ever buy this. But then I'm like, I don't want that logic in a movie because that's not fun to watch. You know?
Oh, it's fun that she fell for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I agree.
I'm sure no person would be like, oh, yeah, you probably are definitely stuck in a time loop. Let's talk about that. But you want another person to experience that with him for a second. So I don't really mind it.
Okay, so we perfectly predict events. Convinced, Rita spends the rest of the day's loop with Phil. She encourages him to think of the loop as a blessing instead of a curse. Lying on the bed together at night, Phil realizes that his feelings for Rita have become sincere. What does that mean? He wakes alone on February 2nd. Phil then decides to use his knowledge of the loop to change himself and others. He saves people from deadly accidents and misfortunes and learns to play the piano, sculpt ice, and speak French. Regardless of his actions, he is unable to save a homeless old man from
death. All right, here's what we got to talk about right now.
All right.
Because the Wikipedia summary is not doing that correctly. Because so about the time where he falls asleep with Rita, he's like, oh, I actually do want to be a good person and maybe kind of take advantage of this. The thing is, the very next scene, he's already being a good person who cares about people. And then the next scene after that is like, oh, actually, death is inevitable. And that's fine. But it's like, so to me, this curse or the universe or whatever, let's go back to the beginning. The beginning is we spend about 5 minutes with this guy and we know he's an asshole to his coworkers and a big for his britches. That's all we really know about him.
Yeah.
And that is enough for the universe to be like, I'm going to traumatize the shit out of you.
Are you trying to
do this infinite time loop?
Yeah, okay.
But wait. So then we get to this part, and he has already decided and is already acting on being a good person. And the universe slash curse is like, well, that's good, but you know what I really need? I need you to impress me.
Yeah.
I need you. I mean, it's great that you care about your fellow man and you want to save people's lives, but how well can you play piano? Like, that is what they need from him.
I wonder why. Yeah, that's like, you should be a good person and also be skilled.
Right.
It seems like also, you should do both those things.
Be a Renaissance man. Be somebody who can really impress the shit out of specifically Andy McDowell.
You just gotta love your fellow man and be talented.
What?
Yeah, and be I'm saying the same thing. You should, yeah, go ahead.
Which I think is actually kind of a strength of this movie is how absurd and unexplained this is. Like, who knows why? He just had a perfect day where he was really good at shit and super popular in the town. Why? Don't worry about it. I don't know. I was kind of into that.
Yeah.
You were not impressed.
I mean, I don't really understand your point.
Oh, my point was I just really like the conceit of the movie that this curse is not actually just about him being a better person, but him being like someone who can impress somebody. The universe needed to be impressed.
Okay, so it's just kind of silly. It's not taking itself too seriously.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, it's also kind of because if it was as simple as like you're a bad person who then needs to be a good right? So we've seen a million of these. Something magic happens to you, and to reverse it, you need to learn a lesson. And it just doesn't feel like cut and dry in this movie in a way that's kind of interesting if you think about it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you're thinking about too much They're like, maybe, let's just have them do the time loop and then the movie's over, is what I feel like was the real writing process. I don't think they thought about the universe and what the universe You're thought.
Absolutely right.
I mean, the first writer did, obviously. Daniel, whatever.
Right. But I don't know. Isn't that fun to think about, that the universe is kind of a bitchy weirdo?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm still staunchly on the not a big fan of the movie, but so I don't want to give the movie credit. But if we do want to just dip into having fun thinking about weird things, I'll do it.
Well, I'm done with my thoughts. So.
Oh, okay.
I thought I was being clever, and you didn't bite. You didn't bite.
No, I'm not receptive.
You didn't yes and me at all.
Not yet.
So anyway, during one iteration of the loop, Phil reports on Groundhog Day in the most douchey academic way that I thought was really lame about something. What was it, like Chekhov talks of an endless winter, but here with these people, it's like, fuck off.
They're like, at that point in the script writing, they're like, okay, so now he's going to do the weather, but really good. Wait a minute. That doesn't mean anything. That doesn't make sense. You can't do that.
Right. Like, when he was doing it badly, it was fine.
Like, that was perfect. Well, shit. We really wrote ourselves in a corner.
So he continues to stay helping the people of Punxsutawney. Okay. So also, the point of him trying to save the homeless man but couldn't is, like, death is inevitable and, like, you can't really change, like, the most significant outcomes. But then he saves another guy from choking, right?
Yeah.
But that's fine?
Yeah, I liked the part where he saved the old man just because it seemed like one item off their list of, well, he should do this because that'd be fun. Or just like something fun to think about.
I thought they were trying to make a point there.
Oh, I didn't think that at all. Thought it'd be like, I mean, maybe. I don't know. If they were trying to make a point, I don't think it was a great point.
Sure.
I mean, it's a nonsense point. Oh, well, if you're really in a time loop, you can't change that. Oh, fuck you. You know, we don't know what being in a time loop's like.
It's that he can change some things, but not everything. That was the point.
This made up fucking universe with made up rules. Sure. I don't care. Don't teach me about, like.
Okay. If we want to do it like the simplest, most screenwritery, shallow way, it's that he shouldn't try to like stop 9/11, right? Like he can only do so many things. I think is they're trying to say there's limits on this. That's all.
Okay.
Is that fair?
I don't know. I don't even know.
I feel like you're just angry now.
No, I don't know what we're talking about.
Anyway, so Phil spends the day helping the people of Punxsutawney. He, like, changes a flat tire. He saves a kid falling from a tree. He saves someone from choking. That night, Rita witnesses his expert piano playing skills to the adoring town folk, and they regale him with stories of good deeds. Impressed with Phil's apparent overnight transformation, Rita suddenly successfully bids for him at a charity bachelor auction, which I've only ever seen in movies or TV. Have you ever heard of this happening in real life? Where
it
you
must
like
be a real thing. It's been in.
I mean, it must be something someone has done at some point, but I've only seen it in television shows.
It's so weird.
I like Arrested Development.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to bet on something. That just seems so weird.
It's very weird.
Like, because you're probably gonna buy someone who does not want to be with you.
Yeah. Weird.
That's weird.
Oh, and they didn't Gilmore Girls do where except you bought their picnic basket and they had to have a picnic with you.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's weird. Bad. No, it's at one point Phil carves an ice sculpture in Rita's visage, tells her that no matter what happens, even if he's doomed to continue waking alone each morning forever, he wants to know that he's finally happy because he
listen,
loves her.
I know I've only known you for one day. But,
day.
However, I have memorized your face. Let's get married.
He says that to her. He finishes the face ice cup. She's like, I've memorized your face. They met yesterday, according to her timeline. And she's like, aww. Yes. What well, the like, fuck?
Yeah.
God.
Oh, is this the end here?
Yeah.
Phil wakes the next morning to I got you, babe. But finds Rita is still in bed with him, and the radio banter has changed. It is now February 3rd. Phil tells Rita that he wants to live in Punxsutawney with her.
So, okay, I get it. Like, Rita is not a real character. She's just sort of a person to exist alongside his transformation into a good person.
Yeah,
fine.
She is an object.
But when he's like, let's move here. I love you. Like, Rita should be alarmed by that behavior.
It's very creepy. Also, why the fuck would you want to leave? You spent 10 years here. You can't
Which
go
is, yeah, well, so to your point earlier, it was like, why didn't he just leave and do other things in other towns? It's like, maybe he was kind of like, coping with it through some sort of weird agoraphobia, which is, so the way to deal with his trauma is to stay in Punxsutawney forever.
I don't know. By your
Yeah, so I think that the ending of her being in her own time loop is so superior because you don't have to think about it at all. And it's like,
I just love it. I mean, I don't, are we thinking the same thing? It's just, that'd be just so out of left field and weird and like Twilight Zone-y.
But just, because I love all the weird aspects of this film.
I think we're on the same page, yeah. Let's see if our brother agrees in our next segment that we call Bro Call. Bring. Hello, John.
Hey, guys.
Hey, John, have you seen the film Groundhog Day?
Yeah. I want to preface any thoughts I have about Groundhog Day with this fact. I do like Groundhog Day, genuinely. Mm-hmm. I don't love it, but I do like it. So let's begin with the comments. Mm-hmm. So, first thing first, you come into Groundhog Day, and there's two things that are readily apparent. One, there's Bill Murray. And two, the movie kind of styles itself, and even like in its genre, it's labeled as a comedy. Those are both red herrings. This movie is comedy adjacent. It is not a comedy. And I think once you come to grips with that, the movie's better for it. But it starts off on a wrong foot that really offsets you. It's not even really a romance movie, even if that's ultimately the end game. I mean, it's a movie about this concept and Bill Murray's character, Phil's journey through it.
I think it's a comedy in the way, if you have to put a genre on it, it's a comedy.
If you have to put a genre on it, it's a romance to me.
Barely. I don't know. She's so nothing in it.
She is kind of nothing in it. That's true. I laughed a bunch at the beginning and like in spurts, but it's like the middle is so cringy and the end is so romance heavy. It's just not a comedy to me. And that makes it makes the movie worse when you expect nonstop laughs, comedy, Bill Murray.
Sure. That's fair.
I will say this. I think I like the concept of Bill Murray more than I like Bill Murray, the actor.
What does that mean?
I like the stories I hear about Bill Murray and like the things you read about him on Reddit.
Right. How much the internet loves him. You love that Bill Murray.
Yeah, I love that bit. I can't think of a single Bill Murray movie that I like think, man, I love that and I love Bill Murray in it.
Do you like Lost in Translation?
No.
Do you like Stripes?
No.
Do you Osmosis like Jones?
Never seen it.
John, you'll learn all about the human body.
Okay. Yeah, like Ghostbusters, don't love it.
John, Chris Rock stars as the white blood cell in it. It's great. David Hyde Pierce is an Advil.
I think you're getting my point. I don't love Bill Murray movies.
Yeah.
I like Ghostbusters, but I don't love Bill Murray in it.
Yeah, he's kind of cringy in Ghostbusters too.
He's a Bill Murray character. He's kind of a creep, but it's fun.
I don't love it. You guys know me. I don't like cringy in any movie, and he's particularly cringy. He also looks like, that movie's what, 93. He looks old.
Yeah.
And like kind of goofy looking.
I think it's because he has pockmarks. I don't know why he does, but I think that makes him look older, especially in our fancy new televisions. It makes it
look older. Like he looked bad, and that was long ago. Which also makes the movie a little bit weirder that it ends with him and Andy McDowell getting together, because while she is a nothing character, she could do better than that.
Yeah.
Obviously. So what grade do you give it?
Let's see here. Movie didn't age well. Very cringy. I did like that Andy McDowell called him out on the cringiest bit, though. That made me feel a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And I do like the concept of the movie. And like, if you say like X media, like Edge of Tomorrow, if I were to describe it, it's like Groundhog Day. You get it.
Totally.
The fact that it's got that going for it is something huge in its favor.
Yeah.
By the way, if you want to see a movie like this that makes a lot more sense logically, because the concept doesn't make sense in this movie, Groundhog Day. Edge of Tomorrow, it like comes together and works, and I love Edge of Tomorrow. Way superior movie. Tom Cruise is great in it. I'm going to give this movie a B. It hasn't aged well. There are a lot of bits that I have problems with. I don't love Bill Murray. Can poke holes in it for days, but I do generally still enjoy it.
Okay, John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right, Michael, let's do this. Why is this a shitty film? Why should no one see this film?
Well, personally, it's a comedy film. I like some of the jokes. My favorite joke is when he meets Ned for like the third time. And he just goes, Ned? And then punches him in the face.
Phil Connors, Ned?
That was like so...
It's very funny.
That was very funny.
I don't usually love that kind of joke, but I thought they pulled that off really well.
But mostly, I just find Bill Murray very irritating and not funny. And okay. So I don't even know what else is a joke in the film.
I don't know. I think that this is sort of just a limitation of what genres are. Like, I get why it's a comedy, but yeah, it's not like an airplane comedy, right? It's not a joke, joke, joke. It's kind of a fun exploration of things, but I think that when somebody calls it a comedy, they're trying to say it's more lighthearted than your average film. I think that's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a strict comedy film, but I think I kind of agree with you, but a little less so. Like, I don't hate Bill Murray.
I don't hate him. I'm trying to be as negative as possible.
I honestly think someone could have done it better, because I feel like when he's an asshole, I'm like, this is perfect. And then when he gets better, because a funny thing about his character growth is like, so his two things is he's not very nice to people and he is like really arrogant. And then at the end of the film, it's like the curse made him talented enough that he still gets to be arrogant, which is a weird, but I feel like a Tom Hanks kind of guy could have pulled off that it wouldn't be like that. But because he's still kind of Bill Murray swaggery,
That's
I don't quite buy it.
He's arrogant. Humility. And then he's a god. Well, now he's
right. Well, like, I don't buy his humility as much as I would a lot of other actors who had done that. Because, like, I feel like they're trying to say, oh, sure, he's good at stuff, but he's so humble. But, like, I don't buy it at all.
I feel like...
Even in the end scene, when all the townspeople are coming up to him saying how great he is, like, I feel him enjoying that too much.
Yeah, I feel like the movie just doesn't make sense. Like, they had a plot, and they're like, well, this is the 90s, so how about it's a romantic comedy? It's like, that. Okay, that doesn't really make sense. Oh, and it's a lesson about how he's got to be good. I don't know if that really works in the film, but they all just kind of threw it in, and there's just a whole mix of everything, and it's kind of a mess a little bit.
Sure. Why do you like this movie?
Because it's a fun premise, and I do think they explore it really well, and your point that it moves really quick because there's just so many ideas in it really makes it enjoyable.
I cannot stress that enough, because even... the worst film ever that manages to tell a story in 90 minutes, I give credit for. And this, I feel like they do really well. Even though the ending is a bit contrite in a way that I hate. Oh, I should have said that for stuff I hate. I really hate the ending.
Yeah.
Because, man, would that have been so much better, though?
I mean, would it?
Because
like,
I feel like Andy McDowell has a lesson to learn about trusting men too much.
Yeah, I mean, that should have been the sequel. Or something, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. I just feel like a more interesting ending rather than, I love you. We should live here, woman I met yesterday. Because how can you possibly have a relationship with someone you might have known 100 years who's known you a day?
I mean, that's just the thing. I feel like this movie really doesn't give a shit about her at all. And I feel like if they would have done that, I mean, the movie just has no imagination to do that, because they would have had to care about her at least a little bit in order to think of that idea.
Yeah. But anyway, why I love this movie. I do love the premise. I feel like they explored it really well. There were actually a few moments that made me laugh out loud. I enjoyed watching it the whole time.
Yeah.
It kept me engaged. I think the fact that they could pull off something so odd, but become so ingrained in like our cultural knowledge, the way John was saying, that's a feat. That's something.
Props to this movie. When I edit the podcast, I put in the trailer at the end. So I listen to the trailers for these movies. And the trailer to this movie makes it sound so corny. And I guess it is a corny movie because it's such a silly, ridiculous premise. Bill Murray wakes up and, oh no, it's Groundhog's Day. It's like, it just sounds like such a goofy, dumb time. But then to explore the goofy moments and the serious moments, it is just... it's really interesting to think about. I'm sure a lot of people who saw this for the first time like left the theater and like, God, they thought for like hours and hours, oh, but like, what would I be like in a time loop?
I think about that now. I think about that when I watch that movie. I think it's well done enough that you're like, what would I do?
It's a cool premise. It's cool that they took a chance. I don't feel like there's a lot of these type of movies. That's like a silly comedy from the 90s that is like, whoa.
Well, yeah, and it wasn't until recently that I can think of a few movies that have tried to do this time loop thing well, as John mentioned, The Edge of Tomorrow, but that wasn't until like 20 years later. I mean, it's crazy that this didn't, you know, have a whole host, and maybe there was a whole host of failed projects trying to do this, but it's hard to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it. Anyway, what grade do you give it?
I give it a B plus.
I was going to give it a B plus too.
I'm still negative about Bill Murray's character. Just the idea of like, he's an asshole, but he learns his lessons. Like, I don't fucking care about him. He can go to hell. But they did such a good job with the premise, I think, that it's fun.
Sure. I give it a B plus because I love the premise so much. And I love how tight it is. And I love how enjoyable it is. So.
All right.
But I think they did short shrift Danny McDowell for sure.
Yeah.
So, who are we sponsored by this week, Michael?
Remember that one part when they're at the auction and they're like, the cameraman's up there and it's like, nobody wants to bet on the cameraman because he's creepy. I'm just like, fuck you, movie. Bill Murray is like 10 times creepier than that guy.
Yeah, but he helped everybody that very day.
It's true. So they but like I that. Just feel like he's the laughing stock of the movie. But Bill Murray got to win the movie.
Yeah.
And that's just weird. I don't like it. Makes me feel bad.
Aw. Well, I think that's... I just feel like those auctions are like just a setup for hurt feelings.
That's true. The movie's bad, but really it's those auctions. What a weird idea. What a weird concept. I don't think,
so
I think it's outdated.
So doesn't Buster, like, he doesn't have his glasses, so he bets all his money on the wrong Lucille?
Isn't I feel that like that'd be like that episode? Really endangering to like women. Right? Wouldn't like creepy like serial killers just bet on women and then kill them? Right?
You know, you can get women alone without buying them at a public auction, which would make you the most suspicious person.
I mean, it's hard, though. We could go down this forever. What the hell are we talking about?
Go on, Michael, about how hard it is to murder women.
Yeah, it's hard.
You go on.
Especially nowadays. You know, everyone's inside on quarantine. who are we sponsoring?
And then you're only murdering people who like break quarantine. Like, don't they have it coming?
Right. I mean,
that's a Dexter situation.
That's a I killed a few to help the many, right? Because they're spreading disease. We are sponsored by CBS All Access.
CBS All Access. Do you want to watch Star Trek, but worse? CBS All Access. They got it for you, friend.
They got it. Well, they have everything, right? They have Stephen Colbert. Late Show.
You can watch all that on YouTube. But thank you're welcome for us taking you as a sponsor.
Yes,
probably Two Broke Girls or Big Bang Theory.
My favorite
got
shows.
All,
hell yeah.
All of them.
Hell yeah. All right.
You're like, I'm watching the show. Not enough laughs.
All right. Now is the time to do the movie. All right. Let's spin the wheel. Chick, 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 chick. Oh, this is weird. This I don't even know if this movie's any good. Our next film is The Happening by M. Night Shyamalan.
Fuck you! Fuck you! I can't pretend that we're doing a spinner. This is Michael's choice.
It's what the wheel chose. I don't even know.
Fuck you! I hate you so much.
The wheel picked it. What am I going to do?
I'm angrier than I can't John spin was it about twice. Super Mario Brothers.
Can't spin it twice. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Flurries on Films.
Yeah, stay tuned for that fucking trailer.
And cut.
Were we supposed to stop here?
What's going on? You can't just leave us here.
Sir, we lost contact.
With whom?
Everyone.
There appears to be an event happening. It's some kind of attack. First stage is loss of speech.
Claire. Claire?
The second stage is physical disorientation. The third stage is fatal.
Attacks are spreading. Boston, Philadelphia,
Maryland.
It's all over the country.
Authorities are now feeling that a terrorist group being responsible is becoming less and less likely.
She says everyone's dead outside.
Really be happening?